Hi, everybody, and welcome to the June 27th, 2018 Your Living Brand Live Show. My name is Ben Baker, and my company is Your Brand Marketing. Now, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, we tell our customer story. We consult, we do workshops, and we do keynote speeches on brand message, market vision, and value. What does that mean? We're the storytellers of your brand. We want to know what you do, why you do it, who you do it for, and most importantly, why should they care? Because when your clients care, you stop being a commodity. You stop being a bid on the sheet and you start being a valued partner. You start being the person that people call up and say, help. How can you help me? How can you make my life easier? And don't we all want to be in that position? And that's what this show is all about. This show is about talking to people and companies and finding out what do they do to make people's lives easier. What's the story that they tell? Who are the people that they talk to? How do they talk to them? And how do they get these people to listen, understand, and engage and find them valuable? Now, this week, I have Peter Britton on my show. Peter is a copywriter, and he's been a copywriter for 3 or 4 decades. He tells incredible stories. He's energetic. He has a lot of fun, and he's really good at what he does. So sit back, enjoy, and I'll be back.
Peter, it is a pleasure having you on board. Thanks for coming on board today.
Thank you, Ben. It's nice to be invited anywhere.
You know what? You know, it is true. It says an invitation is always a wonderful thing. It means people love us, right?
Well, I don't know about love us, but at least they want us there.
Exactly. Or they're willing to take our Visa card.
Yeah. Yes. How about both?
That's right. As I told somebody, somebody asked me what my membership number was the other day, and I said 4516 dot, 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 dot. And they went, took them a second to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, I have a membership number, which I can't tell you, but I also have an expiry date, which I can't.
Exactly. Well, you know what? We all have a best before date.
Yes.
And we're all working up to that date. My attitude is one day at a time and keep smiling.
Yes, please.
So, you know, for people who don't know about this show, this show is all about, you know, it's all about what makes you unique, what makes you different. And I mean, you've had an incredibly unique, you know, life and an incredibly unique business life. It's, you know, what are the things that you do? Who do you do them for? You know, what makes you valuable? What makes you different? And that's the type of things my clients want. So let's start there. Let's look at that as a question. Tell me your story, Peter.
Well, I'm a copywriter by birth. I always say that writers are born, not made. I learned a lot of stuff along the way, but if you don't have a passion for writing, you're behind the eight ball to begin with.
Exactly.
I was lucky. I started my working career in the broadcast business in news and sports here in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Working, my first job was actually at a station which a lot of the stations I worked at don't exist anymore. I worked at CJOR.
I remember CJOR. Okay.
All news. And I learned how to write in a specific style because the new style is foreground programming. In other words, you want people to actually listen to what you're doing. It's not music that plays in the background while you're doing the dishes or driving your car or a million other things. We actually want you to listen to what we're saying. So
right.
I have to be foreground. And I was taught at a very, very early stage of that career to always write in the active voice and the present tense. Mm-hmm. Everything happens in the here and now, and everything is done by somebody. It isn't something that happens to somebody.
Right.
So after spending 10 years chasing fire trucks and sitting in courtrooms and listening to lawyers and politicians and labor leaders, I decided one day that I didn't want to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And was interviewed at an agency here in Vancouver that was in the direct mail business, which I knew absolutely nothing about. And the president of the company said, can you write copy? And I said, well, you know, I'm thinking with my news copy. Of course I can write.
Of course I can.
I'm a writer. Of course I can.
That's right.
He handed me a sales letter.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to date myself here. He handed me a sales letter, pointed at a typewriter and said, rewrite this. In the news business, you're constantly rewriting because obviously the news doesn't always change every hour, so you have to make it interesting every hour.
Right.
So rewrites are second nature to me. So I sat down and rewrote the sales letter, mm-hmm. handed it back to the president. He crumpled it up, threw it in the garbage can, and asked me when I could start. And I said, well, I can start next week, but I'm a little confused. You didn't even read what I wrote. And he said, I can teach you how to write a headline. I can teach you how to write an order form. I can't teach you to have whatever it is that made you just sit at the typewriter and actually do that job. Just
right.
Take the assignment and run with it. Because I can't teach that. If you don't have it, you're not going to be any good to me here, because everybody here has that similar attitude of, I want that assignment, as opposed to I hide from the assignment.
Right.
So I started.
It's the pick me attitude.
Yeah. You know, I always like to say that I have an affliction with my right arm. In a meeting, it always goes up to say, me next. I want to do something.
Well, you can use your left every once in a while, just, you know, to change things up.
No, I'm very right-handed.
Oh.
So I worked at the agency for a while. Then I worked in the list business, in a list broker, list management company, learning about the market, learning about the people that you're writing to.
Right.
I always like to say that a writer has to start from not what's the product, but who am I talking with?
Right. Who's your audience? For?
Who's my audience? If I don't know that, I can't write anything. So I have to start there. And in the list business, you really get into the minutiae of the psychodemographics, who these people are, what their patterns are, what they like to do, how they talk, what their dollar figures they're comfortable with paying. So you get to learn all of those things. And I had a unique role in that I would go to our clients and say, hey, you're renting files from us. What are you testing? What are you mailing? Right. And how can we make your tests better? And companies that we were managing their files, I'd go to them and say, hey, you've got a great big file. It's time to test new stuff. So we were constantly writing tests, against challenges, against tests, to see how to make their whatever they were doing better based on the lists that we were able to provide. And then one day I just said, I'm going to become a freelancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the kind of freelancer who sometimes I'll work in my little, you know, home cocoon and solicit clients whichever way I can. And then sometimes the client can talk me into going to his location and working there for a year or 6 months or 9 months. And because of that, I've been in, Stamford, Connecticut and Cape Coral, Florida and Canton, Ohio and Port Beach, California and Montreal. Working for clients, I developed a reputation of being able to work with anybody anywhere, and so my client list stretches from Sydney, Australia to Moscow, Russia, and just about everywhere in between.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, the direct marketing, direct mail business is something that, you know, people think it's a dying breed, but it's not.
No,
it's, you know, it is the biggest fallacy in the marketing industry is direct mail is dead and direct marketing is dead.
Yes.
Well, I don't care who you are and what you do. It's all about call to action. It's all about effective communication. It's all about adding value. It's all about engagement. It's all about stimulating interest. And all of that is direct marketing.
At the height of the direct mail world in the late 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
The greatest challenge was, and we use this term all the time, rise above the clutter.
Right.
In those days, that meant the average person in the United States, where most of my clients were in the United States.
Sure.
The average client was receiving between 15 and 20 pieces of mail a day.
Oh, yeah.
So when they come back from that mailbox, they had a big stack of mail in their hands, and you had to find out a way to make them see you more and get into your envelope.
Yeah.
In today's era where a lot of people have abandoned mail, the really smart marketers are saying, hey, that issue doesn't exist anymore.
That's right.
I don't have to work so hard to rise above the clutter because there's no clutter there. And the second thing is this age group between 21 and 35 don't get a lot of direct mail. They don't get a lot of that personal touch mail. And that's the best thing about direct mail is we build the relationship.
Absolutely. So
the fact that an envelope shows up at your house and you're 26 years old and it's got your name on it and inside is a letter that says, Dear Peter, and it talks about me and my situation and my home and my hometown and all those other data bits that we can now gather, it really adds power to the presentation. I mean, we sit there on one hand going, this is the age of big data. direct mailers love big data because it allows
absolutely
me to deliver my message specifically. I can talk to Ben knowing that Ben not only uses his right arm to raise for things, but occasionally his left.
That's right.
So I can write something about that to him. So the more data I can gather, the more personalized I can make my message. The more personalized my message, the more likely Ben is to respond.
Absolutely.
Therefore, the more money I can make.
Yeah, and you picked up on something big. I mean, not only is it the personalization. I mean, and you can do personalization whether you do it in a digital format or you do it in an analog format, paper-based. You know, direct marketing is direct marketing is direct marketing, whether, you know, in the mail or it's social media. But here's the thing. To go where people are not, if everybody else is going right, if you go left, it's so much easier to get noticed. It's so, there's so less noise. There's so, you know, less competition, and you have far better ability to gain access to those people's minds, hearts, and souls.
Yes.
By being somewhere that everybody isn't. Not only that, with, you know, Castle, with Canadian anti-spam legislation, you can't do the direct marketing online like Canada, and especially now with the GDPR coming up in Europe.
Yes.
You know, the ability to attack people, and I'm going to use the word attack because a lot of people do, online, you just can't do it anymore just because the regulation is getting so tight. So being able to go after people in a more compelling way, in a more engaging way, a more interactive way, you know, through something that's tangible and, you know, and has a tactile feel to it, you know, is going to get attention that email being one of 5,000 in the inbox never will.
I used to have a client who sold men's shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a 6x9 envelope with a wonderful brochure and pictures of all the wonderful shirts and a nice letter and an order form and all that. And he did okay. And then one day I said to him, why are we putting three samples of your shirts right in the envelope? Three little swatches.
Right.
Because if you watch people, because as a writer, one of my jobs, I think, is to watch people. I watch people all the time. I watch people eating. I watch people shopping. I watch people walking down the street. Watch people when they shop and the number of times they reach over and actually touch the material.
Yeah.
And we sent these people three swatches of his finest material, his second best material, mm-hmm. and his sort of ordinary material.
Yeah.
Sales.
The good, better, best.
Sales skyrocketed for all three product lines,
right,
simply because people could go, I can touch this. I can feel this. Now I know they can put it against their skin and know.
Right.
So if any of your product, you have to think, how do the people buy the product?
Yep.
I'm reminded of a car dealer one time who, instead of sending out a postcard that said, come into the dealership, we have test drives this weekend, sent out a simple letter to people who owned five-year-old or older cars of a specific type in a specific geographic area.
Mm-hmm.
And his pitch was simple. I'm coming to your house. I'm going to drive this new car over to your place. You're going to get in the front seat. You're going to go drive it around the block two or three or four times so you can get the feel of this car. Because that's what you do every day is you come out of your house, you walk into the car, you get into it, and you drive it. So if
you're painting a picture that how this car is going to feel in this guy's driveway or in this woman's driveway.
Well, even better than painting the picture, I'm going to actually let you do it.
Yeah.
So I mean, we talk about now about, oh, I'm going to give them a free sample of this or a free sample of that. I want to give them not a free sample. I want to give them a free experience.
Yeah.
And if I can do that, I can make that connection. You talked before about direct mail and direct marketing. I love the term relationship marketing.
Yes.
What I try to do is I try to build a relationship between my client and someone he does not know.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks he knows them, but he probably doesn't know them. And how do you build that relationship? And you just think of any human interaction we have. We build relationships through personal contact.
Yes.
Not through, hey, we all like the Canucks, or we're all hockey fans. It's the personal relationship of, you know, sitting on the edge of your seat in overtime in game four of the series and knowing that, you know, Henrik Sedin is crossing the blue line with the puck. what does that feel like?
Yes.
So that personal connection that you have of, yeah, I can remember doing that at home. Wouldn't it be better to do it here in the rink and buy a
season? Well, it's the we are all Canucks. You know, that whole philosophy of if all of a sudden you're part of the nation.
Yes.
You're not on the outside looking in. You're part of the tribe.
You always want to include.
Absolutely.
And the more, going back to our conversation about identifying the psychodemographics, the more I know about you, the better job I can do of connecting with you to bring you in. Because, yes. Now, here's the great dichotomy of good copywriting, is what I'm going to do is, and a line I like to use is, I'm going to treat you exactly like everyone else, like a unit, like an individual, a unique individual.
Yes.
So you're going to be treated the same as everyone, special.
Right.
And how do you get that message across? Whether it's direct response or even just general brand advertising, mm-hmm. you have to realize that the people at the other end have to be treated uniquely,
yes.
but the same. My challenges that I have are probably the same as five or six other people in my building, but they're still unique to me.
Yeah.
So how do I sort of marry that? My challenge is you're not alone, but you're unique.
Yes.
Well, and I mean, social media promises that and never delivers.
No, it doesn't. The reason why it doesn't deliver it is because people don't work at it. The reason is everybody's, you know, and I'm going to get back to this. It doesn't matter if it's social or if it's direct mail or anything like that. People assume one and done.
Yes.
You know, people assume I sent out the information, the world is going to beat a path to my door. And you said something really important. It's about building the relationship.
Yes.
You know, relationships are not built with one piece of direct mail. Relationships are not built with one social media post. Relationships are not built with one, you know, trade show exhibition.
Yes.
It's the continuation. It's the listening. It's the responding. It's the engaging. And the more you can be listening to your clients, the more you can give your clients, even if it's direct mail, give them a reason to call you.
You brought up
just the direct mail piece. That's the start of the conversation. What you're doing is you're inviting people to be part of a conversation, and you're great at that.
You made a great point there about trade shows. I've worked on campaigns for a lot of trade shows for clients, and for some reason, clients think that trade show. Your campaign for a trade show starts the day the booth opens and ends the day the booth closes.
No.
And I have to remind them, I said, no, I'll start 3 weeks or 4 weeks before building up the anticipation because I want them. I learned early on that at all trade shows, people do business with people they like.
Yes.
So if you like me, you're more likely to do business with me. So I'm going to start a relationship that invites you to come to something. You're walking through 300 or 400 or 1,000 different booths.
Or 3,000.
Or 20. Why am I going to be so special that you're going to want to stop by and have a chat with me for 10 minutes that's going to build the relationship? Not that I can close a sale with you right at that moment.
Yeah.
So that after the event, I'm going to have something as a follow-up that says, hey, we had a great time. You played our game, or you did our little trick, or you
whatever.
And we've advanced the relationship. It's kind of like dating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you see the person of the opposite sex and you walk up and say, "I want to marry and die with you," you're going to get very, 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 very few people who will say yes.
Yep.
You ask them for coffee. Or if you even strike up a conversation about, hey, I see that you're reading this magazine. I love that magazine. You're starting to build a relationship.
That's
what you have to do with your consumers, with your customers. They want to have that relationship. And the onus is on us as marketers to build it for them, with them.
Yes. And it's much about listening and responding as it is the initial conversation. Because, you know, you said that, you know, for trade shows, you may start 3, 4, 5 weeks earlier. Mm-hmm. Well, the reason being is people may not see your first ad. They may not look at your second ad. They may glance at your third one. But the fourth one, they sit there and go, oh, wait a second here. Let me take a look at this. And by the time they've got the fifth or the sixth one, you know what? They're interested and they're engaged and they're writing down your booth number And they're making sure that when they go to that trade show, you know what? This person made an effort to actually get to know me and to you know, try to form a relationship with me. I should at least go and see what they're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and it doesn't matter if it's direct mail or social media or any type of marketing. It takes time. It takes effort. It takes being deliberate and building a process and building a relationship and listening to how people respond to what you're doing. And that's, you should talk about A-B, you know, what you guys do with A-B testing.
Well, I mean, A-B testing, to me, if you're not testing, you're not living.
True.
And people have to test smart. First, when I talk with clients, I always start with test smart. Mm-hmm. Don't try to test everything. Pick something. Start with a question. Don't start with an answer. Start with, what are you trying to really learn here? Are you trying to learn that if this headline does better than that headline, does this image do better than that image?
Yeah.
What are we really trying to achieve here? Are we trying to get more calls? Or are we trying to get more sales? What are we really trying to do with our testing? And don't be afraid to have, there actually is A, B, C, T, D, E, F, G testing. You can test different panels. It doesn't have to be head-to-head, two at a time. You can do more. But I'm going to say something else. This is one thing that I think a lot of people in our world, in the marketing world, ignore. And people love to do this. And some of the greatest marketers in history would do this. It's called a challenge. And what you do is, in a challenge, you only retain your product or service.
Okay.
The copy is gone, the format's gone, the price is gone, the hooks are gone, the logo's gone, everything is gone. The only thing that's left is the real nut, the very core of what you have. And then you hand this to an outside person, someone who's not so ingrained in what you do that they'll never change it, and say, here's my nut. Here's the people that I want to talk to.
Right.
What do I do now? Give me something fresh and new and different and let me lead. Don't let me be the follower forever.
Yeah.
Follow the rules that we have. You know, you obviously, if you're going to have them order, you have to give them a call to action. If you're going to have a deadline, you have to, as I like to say, think outside the box, color inside the lines.
Mm-hmm.
So follow the hardcore rules, but see it with new eyes and have a challenge. And I used to like to say to clients, once a year, have a challenge. Take your marketing, your very favorite, best marketing piece, rip it to shreds, go down to the very core of it, the product itself, hand it to an outside person and say, here's who I'm talking to. What do I do? Here's my product. Here's my product. What do I do now? Give me something that no one's ever seen before, that I've never seen before.
Right.
I'm willing to make that challenge. So instead of testing little pieces, instead of tinkering with your recipe, clean off the kitchen, go to a store you've never been to, buy food that you've never tried before, except maybe one ingredient that you really love, like chicken or beef or pork.
Whatever.
What are you going to have this time? We all, in our lives, at some point, walk into a restaurant that we've never been to before. Why? Because we're looking for that one great experience we haven't had yet.
Well,
so do that with your marketing too.
And I think that's, you know, that's a great rule in the fact that what it do is it forces you to sit there and say, am I saying the right thing to the right people in the right way?
Yeah.
It really does, because we all fall in love with how we market. We do.
It's worse than that.
Yeah.
I'd say 95% of people out there are in love with their own product.
Absolutely.
They're in love with their own service. They think of it as their child, and they will sit there and say, well, why won't everybody love this?
Yeah.
Well, because they don't. You know, in our world, we used to say in the direct mail world, if 98% or if 93% of the people hate you, That means 7% love you, and you can be filthy rich on 7% response.
That's right.
So I don't have to write to everyone. This goes back to the who am I writing to? I know that not everyone's going to love it. So I don't try to appease everybody's needs and wants. I target the people that I really want. And I sit there and realize that not even those people, not every one of them is going to be in love with me.
Yeah. And it's being safe and secure in the fact that says, you know what, if I'm going to be different, if I'm going to be unique, if I'm going to be special, if I'm going to actually have something of real value, there's going to be a lot of people out there in the world that don't get it, that don't want it, that don't want to spend the money for it.
Absolutely.
And that's okay.
Yep.
Because
yep.
they're not your customers.
Show me the guy who's getting 100% response.
Coca-Cola isn't. Visa isn't.
No, you know? Nobody is.
There's not a brand out there that has 100% penetration.
No.
You know, there's not a brand out there that probably has 50% penetration.
No. And those that get very close suddenly find the boomerang effect.
Yeah.
And I think the classic example right now today is Facebook. Facebook is everywhere, everybody talks about it, everybody thinks about it, everybody's got to be on it. And now you're starting to see, and I'm starting to hear from people, from advertisers, from users, from customers, from clients, you know, Facebook is not all it's cracked up to be, and maybe it's not as good. So I this is a rhetorical question. Are we starting to get over Facebook? I don't know. But
I don't think we're there yet.
No, I don't either.
But I think that what we've done is this is a conversation for a completely different podcast. But I personally think that what we've done is we've primed ourselves for if another replacement did come up, if something new and unique and different and fresh did come up that solved the problems that Facebook isn't solving.
Yep.
They would be able to find an audience.
Yes.
And I think that's the key thing. And that's what we need to understand is that there's always going to be someone different. There's always going to be someone unique. There's always going to be a competitor out there. There's always going to be somebody doing something a little differently than you are. That's okay. Because your job is to speak to the people that find you valuable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They need, as a copywriter, I have a lot of clients who I won't work for and a lot of clients who won't want me to work for them because my style doesn't match theirs. My approach doesn't match theirs. And that's fine. I understand that. I know that the guys that get me get a lot of reward out of getting me. At the end of the day, they see good response and good profits and ROI and long-term value and lifetime value. They see those things. So that's fine. If the other guys don't see it, hey, that's great too. There's a lot of writers out there. I would never say I'm the only one who can do what I do.
That's right.
I just do it my way.
Yeah.
And I think for my clients, I try to tell them that message as well. There's a lot of car rental companies for a lot of different kind of renters.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be this one renter for every possible customer.
That's right. So let's ask this one last question that I'm going to let you go. Because we've been leading up to this. When you leave a room, when you walk out the door and you get you walk down the street and head away, what's the one thing that you want people to think about you and your company when you're not there?
There's sort of like what I want them to think of and what usually they think of. What they usually think of is. Man, that guy's passionate about this. He loves doing this. He just really gets into the. So many copywriters, especially, are, I hate to say it, they're like drones. They with a lot of these copy mills that exist out there, it's just crank out the copy like it's sausage, and they don't care. I really care about what I do. I care about the results that I see. I care about my clients seeing good results.
Mm-hmm.
So. I get to be very passionate about what I do. So most often the reaction is Peter's got this great passion for what he does. What I would like them to think about is there's a funny guy. Because I think the biggest challenge we have is we're on this earth for such a short time.
Yeah.
We take ourselves so seriously. And we tend to think of all the terrible tragedies that go on in life. And as I said, I started in the news business, and mm-hmm. You cover as a news reporter, you cover death, you cover disaster, you cover crime, a lot of horrible things, homelessness and poverty and starvation. You cover all the worst things, and you long for that one story that people will have a smile over.
Right.
I worked as a reporter for 10 years. For years after I was finished, the number one story that people would remind me of was a story I did years ago in British Columbia. You weren't allowed to do polling during an election.
Right.
There was a hamburger place in Vancouver that sold three different kinds of hamburger. At the time, it was the NDP, the Liberal, or the Socred Burger. And that's how they did the polling.
Yeah.
I did the story on it for one election. And at the end of the story, I sat there with the three hamburgers in front of me, and I finished the story by saying, you know, as an impartial reporter, obviously I don't want to make a choice here, so I'm going to make this wise, healthy choice. And I grabbed a big glass of milk, took a big swig of milk, and ended up with this big, huge milk mustache and said, Peter Britton, CBC News, Vancouver.
Yeah.
Years later, I had people coming up to me and saying, you're the reporter who had the milk mustache.
Perfect.
Because if I leave the room and people think, you know, he doesn't see the worst. He sees that life is life, and you got to enjoy it, and you got to have a laugh now and again. I wish I could do that. That's what I so I know I leave with, wow, he's passionate about what he does, and he really wants to get those great results.
Yeah.
But I hope that they also at some point will think to themselves, you know, that was a good joke he told us, or that was a funny anecdote that he had. I really appreciate that. And it eased my day or made my day a little funnier. He knows how to be serious, but he knows how to laugh too.
Perfect. Well, I'm going to let you laugh out off air so you and I can have a laugh as soon as we're done.
You bet.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm just going to say goodbye to the audience and I'll be right back. Peter was a great guest. Thanks a lot for joining us. Now, my name is Ben Baker. My company is Your Brand Marketing. 9 to 5, what do? We tell your story. We help you engage the right audience in the right way so they listen, they understand, and they engage with you. We deliver keynote addresses, we do workshops, and we consult on brand, message, market, vision, and value. Let us help you tell your story more effectively. But every Wednesday at 10 o'clock on the West Coast, this is the Your Living Brand.live show. Welcome to the show. We'll look forward to seeing you next week.